Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. I am Robin Salverson, cow-calf field specialist based out of Lemon, and a familiar voice of Olivia Amundson, our cow-calf field specialist in Sioux Falls, will be my co-host for this episode. Joining us as our guest is Dan Forkey. He is with Cronin Farms near Gettysburg, South Dakota, and we're excited to have Dan on this episode of Cattle HQ to give his perspective of using cover crops on their operation, especially for the use of grazing. So welcome, Dan. We're glad to have you here. And could you just share a little bit about, more about yourself and the operation that you're on there by Gettysburg?
Sure. I've been with Cronin Farms for, to tell my age, 52 years, and we've had cattle. They run the summer on the native pastures along the Missouri River. But we found out is when we bring them home, if we have some covers for them to graze in the wintertime, usually we graze most covers. We usually start about the 1st of November and then we try to graze and it's worked out very well because we find out that you're cycling the nutrients through the cattle. So they're really it's really a plus between the manure and the urine. I mean, they're giving a lot back.
So when did you guys there at Cronin start utilizing cover crops? I know you started utilizing it probably well before in the farming side of things and helping to benefit the soil profile. But did you start grazing right away when you started incorporating cover crops, or did you guys wait a little bit?
We waited a little bit. We started covers in 2015. And we waited because we didn't understand covers. We had an agreement with a SARE grant and Shannon Osborne from the ARS and Dwayne Beck from Dakota Lakes Research Farm helped me with that. And the main reason what we were trying to do, we were single species. We had a really big test plot. It was 37 acres and we a really intensive study, but we were trying to find out the benefit of the ground. And it took us probably in 2017, we started grazing covers.
So in 2017 is when you started grazing. And so with that, what are some of those lessons that you've learned in regards to grazing cover crops? And I know, Olivia, you had the question when we were having a conversation prior to this podcast interview about species varieties and whatnot. So Olivia, make sure you share some of your thoughts there too on what you had questions.
Yeah, I find cover crops so intriguing. And I feel like the more I learn, the more questions I have. And so, you know, when you incorporate cover crops, you have that benefit of, you know, that soil health aspect. And I think more and more people are becoming interested in how can we incorporate livestock onto these cover crops and use it as an additional feed source, especially, you know, in a year where we're seeing less amounts of rain than we, you know, typically do. And pasture land is getting, you know, we're only able to utilize it for a shorter period of time. And so just being able to incorporate these cover crops and really kind of retain some of that soil moisture. I mean, like I said, there's just every time I learn something new, there's something else that pops up and I feel like I have 10 more questions. And so my first question, like Robin kind of alluded to, is how did you kind of hammer in or decide that perfect cover crop mix for grazing your cattle?
Olivia, I don't know if there is a perfect mix, but I think everybody has to be a little bit different. But when we had a full season graze one time, and so what we did was we took a quarter section and it was stubble the year before. And we planted a full season cover because at that time, what I wanted to do was we knew what it cost us to feed through the yard. And I wanted to take that in the middle of December and graze our cattle in paddocks. And so getting back to the mix. So what I'll do is I'll look for a mix. I want one that's high in carbon, and everything I put in the mix, there's a reason for it. is just like, for an instance, I had a buckwheat because it enhanced phosphorus. I had flax because it benefited mycorrhizae fungi. And I think as we go on with that, that's very important to have the mycorrhizae fungi in the mix. I had a BMR sorghum, a BMR corn, a BMR dwarf ethics sorghum. And then I had forage peas and rape and kale. And the reason, there's a few of them things I've taken out because they seem to come back and volunteer and a little harder to control the next year. I really like kale and collards, but kale, you know, my wife can go out and feed it to me. Not that I like it, but I mean, but the thing about it is they grow way into the winter. They don't mind a frost. So when you're grazing in December, there's still some green kale out there. And but what I was trying to do was I was trying to do a lot of products that was mycorrhizae friendly. And, you know, and I don't mean to keep saying that, but I think that's very important for building your soil. So when I picked my mix, it wasn't only to feed the cattle, but it was to feed the soil. I've got a pretty, I don't know, not a difficult mix, but a pretty heavy mix. I went a lot of species and it worked this time. To do it over again, I don't know if I'd quite use that many species because I don't think you have to. At this particular species with the, and I had some cow peas and stuff in there, but I wanted protein, but it was 19.8, and excuse me, $19.80 is for my mix. And at that time I thought it was all right, but I think right now, I think we can take $4 or $5 off that really easy.
And Dan, so I have a lot of questions and I'm hoping I kind of make this like a smooth transition, yep. But so you talked a little bit about grazing and paddocks. So can you tell us, so you put this cover crop in and obviously there's multiple benefits. So then how do you go about grazing these cover crops?
Very good question, Olivia. What we did is, and I think this is really important, is so I sent a biomass, you know, I took a yard square and sent it into Ward Lab because I said, if we're going to do this right, we have to know how much nutrients we have. And I think that's really important. And so like out of this, the biomass sample, November 18th after frost was, we had 11% crude protein. And that really helped a lot in the decision. And then it was a relative feed value of 88 and the forage quality of 131. And I thought that was, really helped to set up the plan. So then what we did is I went through and I set up, we had so many cows on this paddock. So it's a quarter section and we had a hot wire that ran crossways through it. So what we'd do is we'd take the temperature of the day and the wind chill and everything and how many pounds of feed them cattle needed. So some of them paddocks with the number of head we had in there, it might be 7 days. And then if it got really cold, we might shorten that up because we knew they'd eat anything. I think the important thing as far as soil health and things go along with this is I think that we really have to leave some residue. And we tried to leave 30% and we probably didn't get that done. We left 20%, but we knew exactly how many pounds we had in the field and we knew exactly how much we wanted to feed a day.
Now, so then, Dan, my next question is, so you obviously figured out the stocking density based on the amount of forage per paddock. So as you moved them through the paddocks, then were you able to see any regrowth on some of those and then re-graze those areas or were those paddocks done?
As I said before, we started grazing this the 7th of December. So there was no regrowth. So we really watched them. We really managed this. And then the one thing I want to add too is we had quite a bit of snow. And a lot of people said, well, you want to put them in a swath because the cover crops in a swath because they could dig them out of the snow. These cows dug this out of the snow. They dug everything out of the snow because when we had quite a bit of snow that year, when we ended in that paddock, that come spring, there's they've eaten everything. There's 25% of the residue or 30% of the residue, just like when we first started with very little snow.
I think that is such a, what you just said there is really important, that the cows need to work for us versus us work for them, and putting more fossil fuels, diesel, whatever it is, to, you know, feed them, you're making them work for us. And I think that's a big benefit. And we have to, I always think that a lot about just winter grazing in general, and everybody thinks, oh, there's snow out there, we got to start feeding. And in reality, they can get down to that ground and get through that snow and down to that ground and start grazing those, whether it's cover crops or grass or whatever they might be on. So I guess I'm sorry, Olivia, if you had another question. I also am like, oh man, I have some questions for
additional questions. There's so many questions.
Yeah.
But yeah, go ahead, Robin.
Yeah. So my question is, as you mentioned cows, have you guys put like weaned calves out on these cover crops, or like your replacement heifer calves? Can you share a little bit about that if you guys do that?
Sure. A lot of times our replacement heifers, if we're capable of doing that. Right now we're reaching out and putting our cattle on places farther away from the farm, but we usually have something on our replacement heifers where if we have a field of winter that's going to winter wheat, we'll plant a cover on it, and then they'll graze that. We've got one little paddock that's about 40 acres that every year it gets a graze for the heifers. And then as far as weaning, the boys do most of the work. Because it's a young man's job. So anyway, when we have they've been pasture weaning for like 6 or 7 years. And so what they'll do is, and then 1 year we're able to do it. We had one pivot that was planted to field peas. And so we planted a cover in there. And so we put everything in there, and then the cows taught the calves how to graze and everything. And a guy, I really think that's really important that someone teaches them how. And then we took the cows out, and the calves didn't know anything happened to them, and they stayed on that cover. And that was a pretty simple cover. There was some oats, and there was some forage, and there was some kale, there was some turnips, there was some, you know, that's one thing when you get planting in the fall, like your forage sorghums and stuff, you don't really have they don't have enough growth time because they realize that it's time shutting them down. That's one thing about oats. Oats is really silly on that deal because oats doesn't know winter's coming. They just keep growing till the bitter end. So that's why one reason why I like oats in the mix. And then again, you know, no matter whatever mix here comes that mycorrhizae again, no matter what mix I have, there'll be flax in it. It's a little bit of flax, because flax is so mycorrhizae friendly and enhances the phosphorus.
So what are some of those other species that are mycorrhizae? I apologize, that is not coming out very well out of my mouth. Friendly. What are some other species? So you mentioned flax. What are some of those others?
Flax is good. Oats is good. You kind of got me on the spot there, Robin, but that's okay, because I think that like everything, I'm going to go back to my list here. Okay. So the sorghum is mycorrhizae, the corn, and that corn is the BMR brown midrib, and it's a grazing corn. And so that's if you plant something in like the 1st of July, and they'll get little tiny ears on. Cows really love it. The dwarf ethics, the oats. But anyway, it's just the best resource to do what I would do if I was looking for it is go to one of the NRCS charts and see what's mycorrhizae. And that's what I did. I spent a lot of time building my ration, and I still do. I've got a spreadsheet I have where I can go and see what I look for in Excel and drop down, and then the pounds and the cost. And one thing I want to say on this is a lot of times a person tends to overseed. You think you need a lot of seed. And what I'll do is I'll do that percentage. So like if I've got three products, I'll have the total add up to 100%. So if oats seeding rate is 70 pounds, then I'll do 30% of that. So it's 21 pounds. And so no matter how many species have it come up to 100%. If you really feel bold, if you're in a low more moisture. If you feel really good about what you're doing, you can increase that percent to 110 or 115 if you really, I've made more mistakes overseeding. You know, you always think you need more and you don't. One other thing about grazing these covers, what I really like is everybody's kind of fear of prussic acid, even in the summertime. And so one thing about it, you have a lot of diversified mix. And, you know, just like on right now, if you're, it's surprising, sunflowers are mycorrhizae. But one thing about a sunflower, the seed's really cheap because you don't need less expensive. This don't say cheap. So you could go in and you could put in a half a pound of flowers or so. And believe it or not, the cattle like sunflowers. They really do. I mean, so, and that's good for the soil, but there's a whole mixture up there. So they've got their choice. I just think that what we think they should go for right away, they usually don't. I mean, they know how to pick them out. But so they eat some forage and they'll go down low and eat some kale and they'll on and on and on. And the first thing you know, and if there's species in there that aren't really what cattle like, that's okay. Because the cattle might not like them, but the soil likes the diversity.
Well, and I think just like a little bit of a plug here, you got talking about flax seed and, you know, bringing in some of Robin and I's reproductive physiology knowledge, you know, flax seed has a lot of good omegas in it that are really beneficial for the cows and maybe your replacement heifers, getting them ready for pre-breeding. So it's kind of being able to kill two birds with one stone. You know, they've got those flax mag barrels out there, which I hate to say it, get more and more expensive every year, but you could probably go out and seed some flax seed and get some of that added benefit in, you know, a little bit of a less expensive way. So I think that's kind of cool. I'll probably just backtrack quick. I was just writing some notes as you were talking, but you did mention something on fertilizer as well. So you guys, since you've been putting in cover crops, have you seen less of a need for fertilizer, or how's that been working for you guys?
You know, I think if you you graze it, it will help with the fertilizer, because when you graze it, like we talked earlier, that when a cow eats something, 80% goes through her, and she retains 20%. So some of that's available, what's going through her. So, but I think if you've just got straight cover crops, you don't see that benefit. You might see it a year and a half later, but it's really, no one's really proved yet. And I know Anthony Bly's working on it to find out if where that cover crop, because I've done a lot of work on this. So we have straight cover crops, and I soil sampled it before we planted the cover crops, and I soil sampled after we planted the cover crops. So it's used about, it'll use about 35 to 40 pounds of nitrogen. So if that cover, some guys say that cover crop will give it back to you, but when does it give it back to you? So that's why, you know, the price of N right now, that's something the guy has to be realistic and talk about. That's why it's so important. If you're going to plant a cover, if you can graze it, then you're getting some benefit back by having the cattle on the land.
Absolutely. And then, so you guys graze it in the fall, winter time. And then in the spring, do you guys ever harvest it for a forage? Are you able to do that prior to maybe some replanting, or how do you utilize that?
No, the one thing, if a guy's gonna, no, we don't, because we're really sticklers on leaving residue, you know, which has really helped this in this dry spell. We're like everybody. I mean, we're 3.5 inches below normal already this year. But one thing, you guys, and I think for anybody that's grazing cattle or raising cattle, is if you plant a three-way cross of sedan grass, have a brown midrib, a pearl millet, and a piper sedan grass, and then you go in and you cut that off early, you don't let it head out, is what I'm saying. You're still going to get quite a few tons out of it. Let it get shoulder high. And you cut it 6 inches tall. No matter how dry it is, it happens. We've been doing it for 5 years now. No matter how dry it is, the roots of that immediately go down and it starts to tiller. So we've always, most of the time, we get that fall graze out that's about waist high for fall graze. And we had our yearling heifers on that this year, our replacement heifers, and it did really good. We planted the college's wheat test plot on it, and mellow soil's good, whatever. But just a deal for reference for you guys on the cover crop profitability third edition of the Sayre. Read about that on sedan grass, because that's really interesting. The nice thing about the blend, I never like to plant anything alone, is the Piper's got a really fine stem to it. We're very palatable. And then the Pearl Millet's an oldest millet that you can get, and it doesn't have very much prussic acid in it. And then the brown midrib is a little bit better on prussic acid. So that's why I always like a mix in it, because and it does better. Everybody wants to be friends. We just don't let them be friends by planting single species.
Oh gosh, I just lost my train of thought. Go ahead, Robin. Oh, I lost it.
So I'm glad I'm not the only one.
That's a good question too. And I'm like, shoot.
Olivia, it always comes back to Olivia, so we know she'll be able to bring it back. So she's got the youngest mind on this podcast right now, so it will come back. So you had mentioned prussic acid. Do you ever see, and you hadn't really, you know, that is a concern with some of these various cover crop species. Have you ever seen or an issue with nitrates? Or I know in the past I've worked with producers that had planted cover crops and had sulfate issues in their brassicas. Have you seen any of those issues, or how have you managed through some of those so you haven't had that issue, maybe, or if you have?
You know, I think on your diversity of your crop, of your cover crop will help that. But we're very concerned on prussic acid, so we'll get everything tested. And so far we've been pretty lucky, but as I say this, last year we never planted any covers because we were way too dry. I mean, and so when it's dry, we kind of, what we're doing right now is we're just kind of protecting ourselves, kind of rolling up in the ball till we start getting moisture. Because on our farm, I know how important cover crops are to bring carbon into for soil health, but we still need the moisture for our crops that, you know, so we've just pulled back from covers last year, and I don't know if it doesn't change. We probably will again this year.
So that's always a concern or a question is when do you not do it and when do you do it? Like, you wait so long, you know, like, yep, we're going to get moisture. Do I pull the trigger, or are we going to get moisture? Should I pull that trigger? And I know one of the gentlemen I've worked with in the past, he's like, finally, I just started sometimes pulling the trigger, not knowing if we're going to get moisture, because you got to either do it or not do it, you know. And so,
Robin, I pay a lot of attention, and I think everybody should, to how much moisture you have in your profile. And I've got a rod that they use to locate tiles, drain tiles with, and all it is a ball probe, and it's a 4 foot. So I go and find out how much moisture we have. I understand if you got 4 foot of profile, you can give up that inch and a half of rain that covers. But if you don't, if you only go down a foot, which we were in some places last year, it's awful hard to let the covers take that moisture. And, a lot of guys might think different ways, but I think that they're finding that out a lot of Dakota lakes. And I think Jason Miller's finding that out quite too, that there's time for covers and there's time just to pull back. And when it's dry in a drought, I think it's the pullback time.
So what you just said then, basically, if you have less than a foot of moisture, you pull back. Maybe anything a bit more than that, you are like considering putting in cover crops.
Correct. I mean, and I, on an average year is, and our average is, you know, through the whole year is 18 inches and sometimes to get to 19. But if we're less than that, if we're down to where you only get 6-7 inches of rain or moisture in the growing season, it's just hard not because you're so worried about your cash crop. Because, you know, I realize how important it is to build soil health, but it's also important to have the profit in the crop to keep the farm going.
Well, and honestly, Dan, that was going to be my question. I was going to ask, well, what about the soil health? I mean, so we're pulling back now. I mean, are we affecting that soil health by pulling those cover crops off? I mean, are we eventually going to be going backwards? Or so I don't know. It's one of those, not that it's a million-dollar question, but it gets my brain moving. Like, how do we make this all work?
Well, Olivia, the way I look at it is you need moisture to do the mineralization. You need moisture to help grow organic matter. You need I don't feel like we're losing soil health, because in our we have pretty fair size operation, and if we're going to have covers, it's going to be behind winter wheat. So basically, we only get covers in here every 4 years anyway. We're not one of these guys that just a really small and micromanage stuff. I mean, and we're spread out a long ways. So I really don't. I think the in our no-till environment, we gained a lot more soil health. I think the cover crops are helping us, because we had a lot of soil health when we started by using diversified rotations, and then when we put covers in, I think that's just another step. But I mean, as long as our checkbook is what we produce on our cereal grains and or with our corn and soybeans, and then the cattle grazing covers, that's just a bonus. And so, Olivia, I don't feel that we're going backwards. I mean, some people might think so if you talked, but we're not like some of the guys like a Gabe Brown, where he's so intensive managed stuff, and I'm never going to. You know, I asked Gabe one time, I said, well, what do we do? How do we get to be like you are? And he said, well, he says, you guys are big enough. He said, I micromanage it. I mean, he's talking about 1500 acres and, you know, we just do the best we can. I'm not saying, I think most producers are that way. I don't think that everybody's, I think a lot of people, if you go push the envelope and try to do a lot of these things, and run out of moisture, I mean, it's gonna, in a dry environment, I think it's gonna hurt you.
Well, and I think that's the reality of it, Dan. And so I really appreciate that answer, because I think the more people start incorporating cover crops and really start thinking about grazing their livestock, I think we have to be realistic on the fact that it might not work every year. And we always have to be able to have that. I don't know if we wanna say a plan B, but we got to be thinking about how those cattle are going to be fed, and we've got to do what's going to work for the operation. So I just like the reality of what you guys have to do to make it work while trying to work on that soil health. So I appreciate that answer.
You know, one other thing I'd like to comment on is we had a young producer east of us about 70 miles, and he got in on this during the wet years and just thought, you know, bulletproof, and he went and planted about every acre to covers and whatever, and it worked all right that first year, and then he ran into a dry year and it really cost him. So all I want to say a little bit is, if when you're doing something, kind of start on a small scale, because you know, this soil health deal, we've been no-tilling for 30 years, so this soil health deal isn't just going to happen overnight. But so just be thinking of the long term, how you're going to help your kids and your grandkids with it, because I think that's really important.
Well, and Dan, I think you said, or you just made a comment here, like think long term. So I guess another question for you is, how many years did it take before you saw this cover crop being profitable for the operation? Because I've listened to a lot of different presentations on utilizing cover crops, and a lot of times they say, year one is probably going to be the hardest, and you might not see a whole lot of profit out of cover crops. So it takes repetition, consistency, and doing it year after year. Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I do. But see, another thing, Olivia, I want to point out that when we started, we already had really healthy soil with our, where we were going. So it's not really a fair question. Like the young man east of us, he did not. I mean, they were kind of when they no-tilled, they'd save all they planted the beans, and then they'd work the corn ground or whatever. And so you have to have that nitrogen, you have to have that soil kind of left alone and ready for this. And as you know, so the only way I can put dollars on this is when we graze that 160 acres. And that worked. How do we measure the soil health? We had Lance Gunderson and Jim Miller from Redfield, Jason Miller, Dr. Beck, everybody at our field day. And nobody could really, that's an answer that we're still looking for. We're still searching. But Olivia, just like everything we do, is we need numbers. We need numbers. I've got how many days we grazed on that one piece, but we need numbers. And that's how we're going to convince people to really do this, because the person just gets in front of you and say, oh, it worked, got to work, it's the greatest thing ever. And they say, well, what did it cost? What did it do? And them are hard numbers to put together.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Those are hard numbers to put together. And a lot of times I don't have those numbers for guys. Yeah. So I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
So just, I guess I have a question for you. Cover crops have been a more common sight through North Central South Dakota, down through the river, right? I mean, seems like that's probably where it all got started in South Dakota, to tell you the truth, because you guys have been very progressive in soil health and building soil health. But then I have producers asking, well, can we grow them in Western South Dakota, where we are a bit drier? Not, you know, we're usually more that 12 to 14 inches of moisture, and because it's not as common practice out here. It's becoming more common, but some people still are like uncertain that they can incorporate them. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, Robin, I think what we got to go back to is knowing your soil type and how much water you can hold. So like you can do that web soil survey and you can find out how much water you can hold in the top 4 foot. And I think you have to go on with that. Are they going to be able to do what we do? If someone comes to our place and plant the cover that I do, and if they go 60 miles west of here, west of the river, they're going to run into trouble. So because they're promised soils and whatever. So I think that's one way that I think that it would be a good way to research that. Is if you could have somebody either apply for a SARA grant or have the college set up some test plot, or the Soil Health Coalition. You've got a very good one in Rapid City with Sean. And then Dave Olivia, he's with Soil Health Coalition. So encourage them to set up some plots up there in some of that tougher ground and just see what you can do. I know there's a Brent Ireland down at Martin, he's been doing some, and he's a higher elevation. But I think them are very good questions, and I think them to find out what you could do in that region, I think them questions have to be answered. And I'm not the one that's going to, because I know what we can do here. So that's kind of how I feel anyway.
But I think you provided a very, very important point, is understanding what our capacity is here and figuring that out by testing. And so instead of just wondering, you know, like, can I do it or can I not do it? Well, let's do some testing to figure that out versus saying we can't, or I'm just going to try. So,
you know, Robin, I'm going to, the Sean Freeland's, I don't know if you met Sean.
I do know Sean. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and he'd be a good resource for you guys out West. I mean, and I don't know, because he touches a lot of people out there, but, you know, it's just a tougher, just like you look at this whole thing, and our yield goals on winter wheat will be 85 bushel, and you get out, you go 60, 80, 100 miles west of here, and they might be down to 60 bushel on a good year. So that's kind of telling you the story.
Yep, absolutely. So I think we're going to start wrapping up here, unless Olivia, do you have some additional questions for Dan?
No, I mean, I was just going to kind of ask, and this is kind of a wrap-up question, but, you know, for somebody who might be wanting to start incorporating cover crops, what are some of your, you know, starting suggestions? And I know you had mentioned, you know, take it slow, don't plant everything to cover crops right away, you know, maybe use a variety, but I guess, is there anything else that you can say to add to somebody who's looking to start incorporating cover crops?
You know, one thing that I'd really like to, I think it's important, like if you're just starting in cover crops, try to stay at five species. like I've been talked into a few things like sun hemp, and cost a lot for the seed, but I didn't really see the benefit. But you know, when you talk to the salesman, they, boy, we got this new deal. And you know, like the one thing about the radishes and the, you know, and I, you notice I didn't mention radishes, is because radishes has got a big tuber, and they don't, where kale will still have a good taproot, and then they have so much grazing capability. The same thing with the purple top turnips. On a grazing mix, I'll put in some, but only maybe a half a pound. Try to keep your costs down. There's a lot of NRCS has a really good worksheet on figuring cover crops, and I really think too that when they do that, they should maybe try to keep the, really pay attention to your carbon nitrogen ratio. So keep your carbon level as high as you can, because that's what your soil armor is going to come from on the residue. And one of, you know, I said it once, but one thing too is try not to overgraze. I mean, see how much you got, figure out how many tons you got, but try not to overgraze, because that is such a detriment on the soil. You know, when you have bare soil, like on a, like I did it last year, we had a day where it was 100 degrees, and I put in a bare soil, and our soils was 105 degrees. And so I put it in soil with cover, and it was 84. So your mycorrhizae start to, all your animals in the ground start to die when it gets up to about 95 degrees and bare soil to 100 degrees. So I think that's real. I think on our farm, keeping our soil covered with residue is probably one of the biggest challenges we have now in a dry area, but our biggest concern.
Point. We've been talking cattle, obviously, but there are other species like sheep that can utilize these cover crops and be a big benefit, not only to the animal, but obviously to the land too. So,
well, because, you know, they eat so many, they'll eat different things. I mean, yeah. So I think that, but anyway, I appreciate you having me on. You notice I didn't shave today, so I apologize for that. But anyway, I just really appreciate you having me on, because my main goal in life is just to help people better their soils. And that's, I'm passionate about that. And if there's any way we can, or whatever, you girls, and don't ever hesitate about calling again or doing again or emailing something, because I'll help any way I can.
Yeah, Dan, I really appreciate this, because as a Beef Repro person, I've just slightly dabbled in the whole cover crops and grazing cover crops, but it is so intriguing. And so, like, the more you learn, the more you want to learn. And so I really appreciate you coming on and giving us some of, you know, probably just touching the surface on a lot of this stuff, but a lot of really great information.
You know, another one that Brian Johnson, he's at Frankfurt, east of Redfield, and he raises wheat and oats and corn and soybeans, but he's kind of in that higher rainfall, and he grazes covers. So Olivia, it might help you, because he'll either fly on rye or plant rye, and then he's got covers, he harvests his wheat, plants covers. So as a podcast sometime, he might be a really good resource, because he's kind of in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, that's a wonderful, I might even just reach out to you for his contact information to maybe just pick his brain a little bit. So perfect.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Dan. I'm very fortunate that my brother introduced us. Well, actually, you came up to me and said, I think I know your brother.
Yeah, I know.
And so I'm so thankful that we've made this connection through the years. And Dan is truly, for all the listeners on this podcast, Dan is truly passionate about what he does and is a true educator too. So I, like he said, reach out to him and visit with him. He's always, always willing to visit. So thank you so much, Dan. And with that, once again, this has been Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef cattle. Visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information. Until our next episode, remember, the most important decision you make is to be in a good mood.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.